Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Israel's recent raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied Al-Quds sparked protests and condemnations around the world. At least 33 people are killed and many more wounded after a bomb blast rips through a mosque during Friday prayers in northern Afghanistan. And Muslims in Iran and other parts of the world mark Laylatul Qadr, the occasion when the Holy Quran was revealed in its entirety to the Prophet of Islam. Welcome to your world news, coming to you live from Tehran. Thank you for joining us. Tensions simmering in occupied Al-Quds, where Israeli forces have once again attacked Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. So far, dozens of Palestinians have been injured. Israeli forces made arrests, too. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has reacted to the latest attack on Al-Aqsa Mosque. The movement said it's closely monitoring the situation there, and it's fully ready to respond to Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people. Hamas also called on the international community to restrain the occupying Israeli regime and stop its aggression against Al-Aqsa. Tensions at the holy site began last Friday when Israeli forces attacked Palestinian worshippers, injuring scores. The aggression is taking place during the fasting month of Ramadan. Muslims across Pakistan have held protests to show solidarity with Palestinians over the ongoing Israeli crackdown at Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Mohammed Touri reports from Karachi.
Braving the scorching heat while fasting, protesters took to the streets after Friday prayers across Pakistan to voice solidarity with Palestinians as tension continued to simmer in the occupied Al-Quds, where Israeli forces once again attacked Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Protesters here are outraged over what they call the double standards of the international community and the way they view Ukraine compared to Palestine.
Double standards is the biggest issue with international community. East Timor, South Sudan, Kashmir, Palestine, you name it. When Muslims are victims, they will always turn their backs on us. Therefore, I think it's about time to put an end to this collective behavior against Muslims on international stage.
Actually, we are being a Muslim, Al-Aqsa, the Muslims over there are brothers and sisters. If they're in pain, we are feeling the same pain in our body. The whole Muslim Ummah is like a one body. If one part feels is in pain, the whole body feels the pain. So we are feeling that pain and we are gathered here to tell the world that they are not alone. We are with them.
Speakers at the rally stressed upon the need of unity among the Muslim world.
People are who are gathered over here because of, as you know, the situation which is going on in Palestine. Israelis are continuously terrorizing or they are attacking the innocent people of Palestine. That's why we are gathering in the protest to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Again, you know, the Jews, army and the military, paramilitary forces, they are not letting the Muslims over there freely praying and offering their rituals of the Ramadan. And everybody knows this is the holiest month of Ramadan, and this is very sacred to the Muslim.
The Israeli aggression against Palestinians has once again escalated during the fasting month of Ramadan. Scores of Palestinians have been injured by the Israeli forces at the Al-Aqsa Mosque over the past few days. Mohammed Touri, Karachi.
The Israeli embassy in London was targeted by a demonstration of furious pro-Palestine activists who condemned the recent attacks against unarmed Palestinian worshippers this Ramadan. The protesters hope to send a strong message of solidarity to the Palestinians and vent at the UK's leadership, who routinely facilitate Israeli aggression. Robert Carter reports.
Amid ongoing violence in Palestine, hundreds of London protesters mobbed outside Israel's embassy to condemn the regime's ongoing onslaught. The Islamic holy site in the occupied capital, Jerusalem al-Quds, has been targeted with daily raids by not just regime forces, but also Zionist fanatics who seek to desecrate Islam's second holiest site during Ramadan, the holiest month for Muslims.
I struggle to comprehend how human beings can do this to others. It's occupation, but for the numbers of people that are happy to use their hate to hit and kill people, the anger that I feel and the sadness and the heartache for the Palestinians, it's difficult.
The unrest also sparked hostilities between Gaza-based Palestinian resistance fighters and Israeli regime forces as the two sides exchanged fire early on Thursday. The lack of mainstream media attention, despite the shocking footage which has emerged, has equally infuriated many onlookers.
It's not just me. Every Palestinian have been hit with the fact that international law is very selective. The application of international law depends on the interests of these countries. And, you know, the major powers insist to keep putting Israel above the law, to keep shielding Israel from international scrutiny and international sanctions. And if this does anything, it actually exposes that the world is not serious about its own rules and laws.
This isn't the first time that the Israeli regime has conducted acts of aggression against Muslims during the holy month of Ramadan in occupied Palestine. However, global awareness of Israel's crimes is at an all-time high, and with future protest action planned over the next days and weeks here in London, the global reaction to what's been going on is far from over. Robert Carter, London.
Jordanians take to the street of the capital, Amman, in solidarity with the Palestinians amid intensified Israeli assaults on worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque. The protesters say the Jordanian government must expel the Israeli ambassador and scrap a peace treaty signed with the regime. Jordan's foreign minister, Ayman Safadi, recently summoned Israel's chargé d'affaires to protest recent Israeli brutality at Al-Aqsa Mosque and its vicinity in the occupied old city of Al-Quds. Last week, over 75 Jordanian lawmakers also called for severing ties with the Tel Aviv regime and suspending all bilateral agreements. Iran's permanent ambassador to the United Nations denounces Israel's latest attacks on Al-Aqsa Mosque and killing of Palestinians by the regime in Al-Quds. Majid Takhravanchi called for immediate action by the international community, especially the UN, to end Israeli occupation and acts of aggression. Takhravanchi made the remarks in a meeting of Islamic countries' ambassadors in New York, where the UN Secretary General was also present. The meeting focused on the desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque by Israeli forces over the past days. Delegates of other Islamic nations also highlighted the UN's role in achieving a fair resolution to the Palestinian issue. Iran's foreign minister has reiterated that the United States should abandon its excessive demands in order to revive the 2015 deal. Hossein Amir Abdullahian says the White House should work toward a resolution to the Vienna talks. He says the current U.S. administration should have the courage to correct the country's previous mistakes. He made the remarks in a phone call with the European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell. The European official said continuation of the break in the negotiations is not constructive. Borrell proposed renewed contact between Iran's chief negotiator and EU's representative on the talks. Tehran says it's ready to return to the talks once Washington makes the needed political decisions on the outstanding issues. Several blasts have hit different parts of Afghanistan in the past week, killing and injuring scores of people. We discussed that in our news review program. Here is the full story and our guests' take on the matter.
News review program now, where we get in depth in one of the day's top stories. And yet another bombing in Afghanistan, a blast tore through a mosque in the northern city of Kunduz. Taliban spokesman says the explosion left over 33 people dead and 43 others injured. There's been no claim of responsibility for this attack, which follows multiple blasts claimed by the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group in the country. The Taliban say they've arrested a Daesh member in connection with a Thursday bomb attack at a Shia mosque in Mazar-e-Sharif. They say that he was the mastermind behind that deadly blast. Local sources say over three dozen people were killed in the Mazar-e-Sharif bombing. Now, on Thursday, Kunduz was also rocked in a similar attack where four people died there. Major cities in Afghanistan have been reeling from bomb attacks since the Taliban takeover in August 2021. Now joining us for the program is Mr. Tony Gosling, investigative journalist from Bristol, and Ian Williams, journalist and analyst and writer, joining us from New York. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess, Ian, we'll start with you. Why do you think we're seeing this uptick in these terror attacks on Afghan soil, especially in the holy fasting month of Ramadan?
Well, it's the time that the fanatics will pick as especially holy a month, and since these attacks are on what they regard as heretics, Shia mosques, they think they're doing Allah's work, I suppose. It's more interesting to see how the Taliban have really failed to establish control, because they dissolved the previous state and they haven't replaced it with an apparatus of their own. Having warriors wandering around with AK-47s is not the same as establishing the institutions that the previous state at least vestigially had. I presume that's their problem now, is that they really do not have control, and the Takfiris, as you call them, can infiltrate and work at their will without any impediment from the local authorities, because there aren't any local authorities. The Taliban, mostly Pashtun, were never very strong in the north anyway. That was the bedrock of the resistance to them. That's why they were called the Northern Warlords. And the Hazara people, who are being singled out for attack, were pretty much marginalized by all of the major groups in Afghan society. They've always been outsiders. I mean, I'm not saying that in a derogatory way, that they've been forced to be outsiders.
Thank you, Ian. And Tony, welcome to the program there, bud. So, Tony, your initial thoughts on these attacks, and when it comes to the Taliban providing, to Ian's point, security for the Shia community in Afghanistan, the last few days we've seen multiple mosques and educational centers targeted, leaving dozens dead. Are we seeing incompetence to provide security by the Taliban, or something, do you think, more sinister? Your initial thoughts on this.
Well, look, the question is, who are these fanatics? Ian's quite rightly pointed out they are fanatics, but who are they? What is their motivation? Is it really this kind of idea that the Shia want to kill the Sunnis, the Sunni want to kill the Shia? We had a very similar conflict over here in Northern Ireland in the latter part of the last century, called the Troubles, where supposedly that was all about Catholics wanting to kill Protestants and Protestants wanting to kill Catholics. But I can tell you, and I lived over there for a year, right on the border of Northern Ireland, which was called Bandit Country, and it was really nothing to do with the religion and the faith. What it was a practice ground for the army, where they were practicing urban warfare, and also it was an attempt to set these two religious communities against each other. Largely, you know, it was actually faith that brought them together eventually and signed the Good Friday Agreement. So, I look at many of these so-called religious conflicts around the world as an attempt to create a religious conflict by other fanatics. In this case, almost certainly, I would say, the United States Central Intelligence Agency and their colleagues in MI6 and the Mossad. They are the ones that like to see these religions fighting each other. They think that, this is a great idea to keep the people down. And there are, of course, as people may know, some of you may realize, there is a whole philosophical cult around starting religious wars, particularly evident down at the Al-Aqsa Mosque last weekend and during the week, where there is an attempt to try and get the Zionists fighting with the Palestinians and make out that it's a religious battle. Actually, the Jews that are behind that are not religious Jews. They're secular Jews for the large part. And if they say they're religious, they're fanatical. So there's a definite attempt to start these. And
stay safe, both of you. Always a pleasure checking with you both. Ian Williams out of New York and Tony Gosling there from Bristol. That's a wrap. This segment of the News Review program. Thank you for joining us and goodbye for now.
Iranians are marking Laylat al-Qadr, or the Night of Destiny, the occasion when the Holy Quran was revealed to the Prophet of Islam some 14 centuries ago. Yusuf Jalali has this report from the Holy Shrine of Imam Reza, the 8th Shia Imam in Iran's northeastern city of Mashhad.
Whispers with God on a night that's believed by Muslims to be a time when their wishes are fulfilled. It's called Laylat al-Qadr, or the Night of Destiny. Muslims observe the occasion every year in the month of Ramadan, when they congregate at religious sites to pray and make wishes. To Iranians, no place is better than the shrine of the 8th Shia Imam Reza in the city of Mashhad to keep vigil on the occasion.
Words cannot describe my feelings tonight. It's a night of destiny when God has promised to listen to our prayers. It's a night which the Quran says is better than 1,000 months. I'm so happy to be in Imam Reza's shrine on this divine night.
After 2 years, we once again can visit the holy shrine of Imam Reza, our beloved Imam, and that on the Night of Destiny. I wish that God will eradicate the coronavirus once and for all, for us to be able to live peacefully and visit our holy sites.
Islamic scriptures say Laylatul Qadr marks the night when the Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad. The Quran says on this night, angels descend on earth to listen to the prayers of worshippers.
We believe that on the Night of Destiny, angels come to earth upon God's order. The Quran says in its verses that the book was revealed to the Prophet on this night, and the angels will stay on earth till dawn. That's why we never miss out on this holy night and come here to pray.
No exact date is provided for the Night of Destiny, but all Islamic references are unanimous that the Quran was revealed to the Prophet on one of three different dates, the 19th, the 21st, or the 23rd night of the holy month of Ramadan.
It's the first time after more than 2 years that the Night of Destiny is marked without serious concerns over the coronavirus, and this has attracted this huge number of pilgrims to the shrine of Imam Reza to once again mark Laylatul Qadr en masse, and at the same time, reunite with their 8th Imam after 2 years. Yusuf Jalali from the Holy Shrine of Imam Reza in Mashhad.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Of opportunities. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam and welcome to the program. Ramadan is the breeze of God's mercy. Many understand the fact that life without this blessed month would be spiritless and frosty. Ramadan is the month of worship. Worship is the way to be the good servant of God. This is the ultimate goal of creation. If one worships God honestly, he will seek help only from him. It is said in the Quran, "Does not Allah suffice his servant?" No doubt, God has power over all things. Thus, even if we call the prophets and imams, in fact, we ask them to intercede for us as they have high status with God. It is a Quranic principle to seek the means of recourse to Allah. This is clearly mentioned in Ayah 35 of Surah Ma'idah. In view of this, we take recourse to the pure and good servants of God while trusting in Him for our problems. In this part of the program, let us touch upon the laws of fasting for travelers. A person who travels in the blessed month of Ramadan should break his fast if he shortens his daily ritual prayer. In other words, if his journey makes him shorten his 4 rak'at prayers into 2 rak'at ones, he cannot fast any longer. Most of the jurisprudents say that this distance is 4 to 5 kilometers after the last buildings of the city of residence. However, if he travels the distance while intending to stay at least 10 days in the new place, his prayers are complete and he cannot break his fast. A person whose job is traveling or has to stay somewhere for a long time to study, his prayers are complete and he should fast. If a traveler arrives in his birthplace before noon, he should fast provided that he has not done anything which nullifies the fast. But if he arrives in the afternoon, he cannot fast. Meanwhile, if a person leaves his birthplace in the afternoon and goes more than 4 to 5 kilometers from the city, his fast is correct. But if he leaves in the morning, his fast is nullified. This distance of 4 to 5 kilometers is called Hadd-e Tarakhus. It is the distance when the last buildings of the city are no more visible or the sound of azan or call for prayer cannot be heard. The point to note here is that the traveler cannot break his fast until he reaches the mentioned distance. Therefore, he cannot eat breakfast or anything else as soon as he decides to travel more than 4 to 5 kilometers. Dear listeners, you may have heard this ayah of the Quran. Call me so that I answer you. Here God has guaranteed that he will answer the call of his servant. It has been mentioned in many narrations of the prophet and the infallible imams of his progeny that no prayer is left unanswered if the caller appeals to God sincerely and with pure intention. Yet, this does not mean that whatever we ask God, he will give us at once. God is wise and has created the world wisely. He knows what is good for us and what is bad. May things that we ask God are not to our benefit. Here, God postpones fulfilling our call. In another hadith, it is said that God does not meet the servant's call because he has saved for him much better than that in paradise. Anyway, praying and supplicating while fasting is highly recommended because the servant is closer to God. The Prophet's 7th infallible successor, Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, says, The prayer of fasting person is accepted at the time of iftar. As you know, iftar means breaking the fast. Imam Kazem, peace upon him, would use any opportunity to pray and worship God. He was imprisoned at the dungeons of the Abbasid tyrants for at least 7 years. Some historical accounts say that he was imprisoned for 14 years. Imam Kazem spent these years in shackles and chains, but he never forgot to pray and supplicate. He would seek help from prayer and fast as it the Quran recommends. The jailer of the prison in Basra said, "I tried to listen to Imam Musa Kazem's prayers. He would just ask God for mercy and forgiveness and used to repeat these words. My God, you know that I had asked you to grant me a quiet place for worship. Now I thank you for preparing such a place for me."
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, ladies and gentlemen, the loyal audience of IRB English Radio, welcome to another episode of Back to Reality. In the realm of truth, we have two very dear guests. Now I want them to introduce themselves to you. Welcome.
Assalamu alaikum. I'm Muzaffar Haider from the UK, and I'm studying in the holy city of Qom. Alhamdulillah.
Such a pleasure to be with you. So you're studying religion?
Yeah, I'm studying in the Hawza.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm Sadiqa from the UK as well, and I'm studying in Qom as well in the Sisters Hawza. And my field of study is fiqh and usul. Fiqh and usul is basically the principles of jurisprudence.
Very great. Maybe it has happened to us many times, or at least we have seen that in different groups. As we were students, we saw that at school. And also as we grew up, we saw that at universities. When we are in a group and there is a person who is weaker than the others, or he is a stranger, he's a newcomer, he is an easy target. He or she is an easy target. They are easier to be excluded from the group. They're easier to be pointing at them like, you are the one who is to be blamed and something like that. What are the reasons for that? Why do we feel like that when we are in a group, or when we are even in the families that might happen as well? There are always, I have seen at least, in some families that there are children who are easier than the others to be blamed. The others do the wrong things, and the younger one is going to be blamed for what the elder one did, or the vice versa. What are the reasons behind that? Why such thing exists in human beings?
Human beings are a scary creation, to be honest. A very weak creation of Allah, initially at least. And we're always looking for a scapegoat. Human beings, and this is a behavior pattern.
Exactly, a scapegoat.
You can see it in family circles. You can see it in schools. You know, when bullying takes place, nobody stands up for the one who's being bullied. You can also see it on the governmental level, right? When governments turn into dictatorships and they start to persecute a certain minority group.
Exactly.
It's happened throughout history, and this is the way that we are, right? Allah has created mankind la'ifa, weak. That's what we are, and this is one of those signs of that weakness. When human beings are at the mature state of their intellect and their spirituality, you'll see this behavior more and more, and it's very, very similar to that of the animals. Animals will, you know, that common phrase, the runt of the litter, you know, even if there are brothers, and sisters.
The weaker has to be killed.
The weaker one will often be like excluded, mm-hmm. pushed aside.
It's going to be hunted.
It's going to be just removed by the farmer, actually, mm-hmm. and probably killed or something.
Exactly.
It's They're a really sad reality.
They're not going to live so long.
When we advance in our intellect and in our spiritual state, this becomes less and less predominant mm-hmm. in us until we reach a stage where we actually come to the defense of those weaker fragments of society.
Mm-hmm.
You know the famous hadith of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, where he says, truth is with the oppressed. It's an allusion to the idea that when you see a certain weak element of the society being abused and oppressed, you're supposed to see that truth is with them and stand up for those oppressed ones.
Exactly.
This is where the greater intellect takes us.
Exactly.
On a side note, if I may mm-hmm. interject, we are a weak creation. Allah has created us, but He has not created us to oppress. It is within our innate nature, our divine innate nature, to not oppress. You can see that even in children, for those who have very young children at home, if they see someone crying, the first action is to go and calm the person down to try
to
and
appease them. Yes.
Yes, to try and make them calmer,
pacify them.
Yes, children are the best example of how our divine innate nature works, because they don't have any prejudices within them. They don't have any racism within them for them to showcase it to others. So, for those who have young children, will often find that the children have this nature of being kind,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the oppression that we do, a lot of the oppression that we showcase outside is what we learn from our environment,
mm-hmm.
what we learn by looking at other communities. And even when it comes down to survival of the fittest, right, as mm-hmm. Brother Muzaffar
exactly.
mentioned, it is more about looking out for ourselves. It's more about taking care of our own selves, our own interests,
mm-hmm.
rather than understanding that the person opposite us is a human being just like us.
And also, there is another fact which is which should not be denied, politically speaking, we could say, that there is an agenda. There are some minorities that are being introduced in a way that they have to be always blamed. They are the ones who are the guilty. Every time there is a story, they try to show that that minority is the guilty, being it's black, being that minority being black or Muslim or whatever. You know what I mean?
It's not only on a political level. It's on all levels.
Exactly,
even within
yes.
our communities, if you see, it's unfortunate. It's very, very unfortunate that the black community has been largely blamed for a lot of issues that we have. And it comes down to the fact that we see ourselves against us or versus them. It's us versus them. We don't see ourselves as one ummah. We don't see mm-hmm. ourselves as one community who's like one body that we help each other progress in our daily lives.
Exactly.
It always comes down to what my interests are, what benefits me, and how can I go ahead in life, even if it's at the cost of trampling over another person.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Brother, tell us, how should we react in those situations when there is a minority that is being blamed or that is being oppressed? How should we react?
Well, I have a very simple code for that, and that is to come to their defense. Right. When
mm-hmm,
you see somebody being oppressed,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter who it is. If that minority group or that individual is being hurt in some way by the rest of the group, that person needs to be defended.
Exactly.
That is not the place for you to sit on the fence. That's not the place for you to save your own skin. As they say, you know, evil things happen because the good do nothing.
Exactly. Right?
Bad things
that
only
is very
happen
true.
Because the good do nothing. And, you know, this is a pattern that we see throughout history and in the history of the Ahlul Bayt as well.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that Sayyidah Fatimah al-Zahra, salamullah alayha, had to go door to door throughout the city asking people to support Imam Ali alayhi salam? Why?
And also we have Imam Hussein alayhi salam, who has been left alone in the field of Karbala.
Why did that happen? It's because of this mentality, you know.
But people usually are scared of telling the truth. People are usually scared of going with the oppressed person.
Yeah, and that shows a lack of iman, actually. Mm-hmm. The Quran says explicitly, إِنَّمَا ذَلِكُمُ الشَّيْطَانُ يُخَوِّفُ أَوْلِيَاؤُهُ. It is only and only shaitan that makes you afraid of his friends. Mm-hmm. Right? So we're supposed to recognize that and fear none but
Allah.
Allah.
Of course.
Only Allah is supposed to be feared. He's the only one worthy of being feared. But this is really what it's about. We have to train ourselves.
Yes, that is very true.
Can I follow up on his point?
Yes, yes, sister. Tell
us. A lot of the times when we come into the defense of the oppressed, we have to recognize the environment we are in and then support the oppressed in that manner. Sometimes our actions might actually lead to the oppression being worsened on them.
Yes, exactly.
So it's not, we cannot use one plan across every level of oppression or across every type of oppression.
It must be done intellectually.
It must be done. In some cases, we need diplomacy.
Exactly.
In some cases, we need levels higher than diplomacy, like lobbying governments. Mm-hmm. And it depends on every situation. Recognizing what is needed is another issue. If we recognize how to help the oppressed, then we can help them in the way that they need, that will remove the oppression, not worsen it on them.
Exactly, not make the situation even worse here. We have to work one by one, you know. We have to be all together. If we're going to help an oppressed person or an oppressed minority, we have to be all together. There's no way that I say, okay, for example, in a small example, I would say, in a school, there is a child being bullied by others. There must be other students who work together for that one person. Only one person is not going to make a difference, you know? If I am going to understand that, okay, somebody has been oppressed, and I myself staying on my foot and saying, okay, this one is oppressed, as you said, the situation is going to get tougher because only one person, two person, they're not going to make a change. There must be a community to help you.
I have to jump in here because this is the mentality that actually led to the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, where people say, well, there's no point in me helping, right? He was left with 72.
No, what I meant is that we must create a group.
Yeah, sometimes you have to create a group. Sometimes, as the sister said, you need to create lobbying. Mm-hmm. There's lots of modes and methods that you can go about it. Mm-hmm. Even the riwayat tell us, you know, sometimes you, no matter what the case is, you have to stand up against oppression. If you can do it through action, do it through action. If you can't do that, then do it through your voice. If you can't do it through your voice, then at least, at the very least, do dua. Right?
Exactly.
That's when you're
completely
helpless. But the bottom line is that standing up against the oppressed has to take place. Even if it's in your own family and you're afraid that if I get involved now, these people won't like me as much.
The situation is going to get tougher and tougher.
Yeah, but nobody
said... If I step in.
Nobody said that if the situation gets tougher, you shouldn't do it.
Yes, that's a thing that must happen.
It's going to happen. It's inevitable. Mm-hmm. The situation is going to get tougher for you and maybe for your family, maybe for others around you.
Exactly.
If you step in, that does not absolve you from the duty of stepping in. You still have to do it.
So right now, let's go for a little break and we'll be back after just a short interval. Thank you for listening, guys.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
As you said, it's not fair to say that because it is going to lead into some disturbance, I'm going to stay silent and leave the situation. We have to stay for it and speak up.
Ahsan, right, sister, there are Muslims, unfortunately, who abstain from speaking out or from doing whatever, you know, whatever the method of standing up for the oppressed is, out of fear of what will happen, right? You know, it might cause this disturbance, it might create this problem. It doesn't matter. We're supposed to do it regardless.
Yes.
But we're supposed to do it in the correct way.
Exactly. That is what I'm saying. Intellectually, we have to use our intellect. We should be clever in doing that as
yes.
well.
An example would be a child. If a child is being bullied versus a child who's going through child abuse in the home, we would adopt different measures to help the child. Mm-hmm. If it's bullying in the schools, we will involve the parents. But if it's child abuse at home, we're not going to be involving the parents. They're the ones undertaking the abuse.
Exactly.
Here you would involve a third party. So the way we go about is very important in
that
removing the oppression.
That is very important. We must use diplomacy, as you said. Sometimes you have to be very careful about the way we're going to speak up about that oppressed person and minority. So we were discussing the fact that in many situations, there are some minorities that are being bullied or oppressed, and we understood that we have to speak up. We shouldn't stay silent because we're afraid of the consequences. Always there is a way to get out of it, and always there's a way to find a method that could help the person who's been oppressed. So just be brave and speak up. So thank you for listening to us. This was all the time that we got for today's episode. Until another session, I bid you farewell, and may Allah protect you all.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again. Let's become whole again, proud again, 'cause I swear with firm belief in our hearts we can bring back the glory of our past. My Ummah, he will say, Rasulullah, that day, even though we've strayed from him and his way. Look at where we were, look at where we are, tell me, is this how he'd wanted to be? Oh no, let's bring back our glory.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
the city of Al-Quds, the jewel of the Islamic world. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. In this series of programs, we shall discuss the significance of designating the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan as International Quds Day. This subject has taken on added importance in view of recent efforts by the Zionist regime to normalize its ties with a number of Arab countries. Please stay with us. The blessed month of Ramadan is very important for the entire Muslim world. Muslim countries congratulate each other with the arrival of this holy month and the Islamic world's largest and most important festivity, Eid al-Fitr, is at the end of this month. Ramadan is a month of worship and supplication to the Almighty. Muslims pray to God before the break of dawn and refrain from eating and drinking from dawn till dusk. But fasting in the month of Ramadan isn't just about not eating. During this month, Muslims strive not to commit any sins. They also eschew any behavior or talk contrary to humanitarian and ethical values. In actual fact, Ramadan is the month where ethical, moral, and humanitarian values manifest themselves. A great example of moral and humanitarian values is to fight injustice and oppression, and to defend those who have been oppressed. In our times, the genocide and expulsion of Palestinians from their homeland surely ranks as the most prominent act of tyranny and oppression in contemporary world history. The founder of the Islamic Republic and the great leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, in support of the Palestinian cause and in opposition to a tyrannical regime, designated the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan as World Quds Day. In February 1979, in the first month of Ramadan, after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini declared the last Friday of the month of Ramadan as the World Quds Day, so that all Muslims and freedom-seeking nations of this world can call for the liberation of Al-Quds and show their support for the oppressed Palestinians. The rallies, marches, and other events held on this day will raise awareness and demonstrate international support for the just struggle of the Palestinian people. The founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, right from the start of his uprising against the despotic Pahlavi regime, supported the Palestinian cause and the Palestinian people. The Imam's goal was liberation of occupied Palestine. By designating the last Friday of Ramadan as International Quds Day, the Imam highlighted the danger posed by Zionism and kept alive the Palestinian struggle. He drew the attention of Islamic nations and all Muslims to the problem of Palestine. But the Imam had another objective with this designation. He reacted to the betrayal of the Palestinian cause by Egypt's Anwar Sadat, who had signed the scandalous Camp David Accord with the fake Zionist regime, officially recognizing the Tel Aviv regime. Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, issued an important statement on August 8, 1979, on the subject of World Quds Day, declaring, "I have pointed out the danger of the usurper Israeli regime to Muslims everywhere, over a period of many years. The usurper regime is intensifying its attack on our Palestinian brothers and sisters. And, particularly in southern Lebanon, the Israeli regime is relentlessly bombarding Palestinian homes, killing Palestinian fighters. I call on Muslims throughout the world and all Islamic governments to unite forthwith and confront this usurper regime and stand up to its aggression. I invite all Muslims to select the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan as God's Day and in a ceremony display their international support for Muslim Palestinians and their lawful rights. I beseech the Almighty to grant victory to Muslims and make them emerge triumphant against the disbelievers. In another message setting out the importance of naming the last Friday of Ramadan as Quds Day, the late Imam said, Quds Day is truly an international day. It doesn't just belong to Quds. It is the day where the oppressed confront their oppressors. The downtrodden take on the Aryan powers. It is the day where nations who suffered under the yoke and tyranny of the United States rise up. It is the day where the downtrodden should be appropriately equipped in the face of the Aryan powers and the arrogant should be forced to bow. Quds Day is Islam's day. It is the day for reviving Islam. The Islamic laws should be implemented in Islamic countries. In fact, Quds Day symbolizes unity and determination of the Islamic Ummah vis-à-vis the crimes committed by the Zionist regime in Palestine, Gaza, and other Islamic lands. In fact, the blood of Palestinians has unmasked Zionism and revealed the true face of this usurper regime. In Islamic Iran, just as in all other countries, masses of people throng to the streets showing their support for the Palestinian struggle and in marches and rallies call for liberation of occupied Palestine. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, commented on International Quds Day by saying, "The dawn of the Islamic Revolution in Iran opened up a new chapter in the struggle for occupied Palestine. From the first steps which we took, namely expelling Zionists from Iran, Zionists who considered Iran as one of their safest bases in the region, to converting the unofficial Israeli embassy to the Palestinian embassy in Tehran, to cutting off the supply of oil, an extensive political activity which led to the creation of a resistance front in the entire region. For the first time, real hope for solving the Palestinian issue was raised." Commenting on the changing of political equations in the region after the Islamic Resistance Front took shape, the leader said, "With the emergence of Islamic Resistance Front, it became harder and harder for the Zionist regime, and this trend is set to continue into the future, inshallah. On the other hand, the efforts of the supporters of this regime, first among them the United States, has also increased substantially. The emergence of a young, faithful, highly committed and self-sacrificing force such as Hezbollah in Lebanon and the emergence of highly motivated resistance movements such as Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad in Palestine itself have not only worried the leadership in Israel, but have caused huge dismay in the United States and other Western countries which back Israel. Currently, full military support, providing both hardware and software for the Israeli regime, as well as finding allies within the Arab world, are just some of the assistance provided by Israel's Western backers. The treacherous actions and words of some Arab governments and the open betrayal of some Arab politicians and cultural figures vis-à-vis the Palestinian cause is obvious for all to see and is no longer a secret." Before the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, the just struggle of the Palestinian people to liberate their occupied homeland had not borne fruit. Despite all their efforts, the Palestinians had failed to liberate their homeland from the clutches of the fake Zionist regime. The reasons for this failure were several. Palestinians had little financial, material, and spiritual support for the international community. There was division among Islamic and Arab nations, and the Palestinian resistance groups themselves were divided. United States and Europe provided extensive support and propaganda in favor of the Israeli regime. The United States and Europe provided extensive support and propaganda in favor of the Israeli regime. The Western champions of human rights and freedom apparently couldn't care less about the human rights and freedom of Palestinians. The weak ideology of Palestinian resistance groups, the dearth of new ideas, organizational problems, and their failure to mobilize the masses had also contributed to the poor performance of the Palestinians vis-à-vis the Israeli regime. Some Arabs had even begun to take seriously the myth of invincibility of the Zionist regime and the United States. The 1979 Camp David Accord between the Israeli regime and Egypt further disheartened the Arab masses and the Palestinians, adding to the gloom and despair. But all that changed very dramatically in favor of the Palestinians when the Islamic Revolution triumphed in Iran in 1979. Iran's wholehearted and comprehensive support for the Palestinians provided them with substantial financial and material support, as well as ideological backing. This resulted in the marginalization of leftist and Marxist ideology among Palestinian resistance groups, with Islam taking front and center stage. A prominent Palestinian resistance leader, Sheikh Asad Tamimi, commented on the effects of the Islamic Revolution on the struggles of the Palestinian nation when he said, "Before the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, Islam hadn't entered the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Even the choice of words was telling. Instead of jihad, the Palestinians tended to use words such as nidhal and kafa. But the Islamic Revolution in Iran revealed this reality and true principle to the Palestinian people. Islam is the solution, and jihad, or uprising, is the main means of attaining this solution." Leftist and Marxist ideology among Palestinian resistance groups gradually lost their appeal, and this was the main effect of the Islamic Revolution on the Palestinian people's struggle. Another effect was the special status of mosques and religious leaders in the Palestinian struggle. Their ability to mobilize the masses led to the intifada of the Palestinian people. The martyred General Secretary and founder of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement, Dr. Fatih Shaghaghi, had this to say about the effect of the Islamic Revolution on the Palestinian people's resistance. "Nothing excited the Palestinian nation and aroused their emotions as the revolution of Imam Khomeini. It motivated them and revived their hopes. With the victory of the Islamic Revolution, we were awakened and we realized that Israel and the United States could be defeated. We obtained inspiration from Islam and realized that miracles were possible. The struggling Palestinian nation regards the Islamic Revolution as fate or destiny and considers Imam Khomeini as one of the eternal leaders of Islam."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.